Coming up this week on the Vacation Land Podcast, Disneyland files permits to renovate a long-closed arcade, Pixar Fest kicks off at the Disneyland Resort, and Universal Studios announces who will be evicting Shrek from its 4D theater. Plus, with the Avengers exterminating a Bugs Land at California Adventure, it's time to take a look back at the history and future of that area. No spoilers here. Thanos demands silence. This is Vacation Land.
Welcome to the Magic Kingdom of Disneyland. There are several ways to visit this happy place. If this is your first visit, you may enjoy the guided tour.
Welcome to Universal Studios Hollywood, the entertainment capital of LA.
This is the Vacation Land Podcast for the week of April 30th, 2018. Visit our new travel partner, Magical Vacation Planner by Caris, for helping plan your next vacation getaway to any of the following: Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, Adventures by Disney Andolani, Universal Studios Orlando, and Royal Caribbean, Princess, Carnival Cruises, and more. Get your free consultation by visiting Magical Vacation Planner by Caris on Facebook or by visiting magicalvacationplanner.com/staff/Caris, CARISS-Milano, MILANO. Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Vacation Land Podcast, a discussion of the latest news, reviews, and history from around the Southern California theme park scene and beyond. Brought to you by our team of theme park fans and experts, I am Chris Ramirez, the host and executive producer of the Vacation Land Podcast, and this week I am joined by YouTube sensation and Knott's Berry Farm reporter, Brandis Strautman. Hi, Brandis.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Day or afternoon, however, whenever you're listening.
Peek behind the curtain. Alternate John and contributor, John Strautman. Hi, John.
Yo, how you doing?
Good. And our associate producer and original John, Mr. John Bays. Welcome back, John.
Glad to be back, sir.
Awesome. So you were at the San Jose City Comic Con a couple weeks ago?
Silicon Valley Comic Con.
Silicon Valley Comic Con. Tell us about that. How did that go?
As Comic Cons go, it is one of the, I'm going to say, coolest, chillest, most intellectually highbrow comic con, because it's the fusion of Comic-Con and Science Fair.
Oh, okay.
A lot of,
it's up in Silicon Valley, so
exactly.
It's
so
it's like double layer of stuff.
And they try to bring in a lot of STEM stuff to,
wow.
So it's like, Andy Weir talking and a lot of various NASA.
Wow.
Space people there and just.
And they're all dressed as like,
Wolverine.
Yeah,
Wolverine. Yeah, Wolverine. Wolverine,
Neil deGrasse Tyson, but he's, dressed as Thanos.
Couple of Totoros.
Yeah. How are the, is it a small comic? I've never heard of it until you told me.
It depends upon what you define as small. I mean, yes, compared to San Diego Comic-Con, it is, but nothing. The San Jose Convention Center, probably, I would compare it to the size of the Orange County Convention Center. So, yeah, somewhere around that size.
The one in Anaheim?
The one in Anaheim.
Okay.
Definitely not as large as what LA could be, but
yeah. All right.
Did you dress up?
Did not.
If you were to dress up, what would you? Or you're like, I never would dress up.
I would dress up with a group.
Oh, that's cool. That's
yeah.
A good idea.
John has dressed up with us.
Are you a Zelda fan?
No.
Then you do not have a group to dress up with.
John did dress up with us for 1 year. We went to Walt Disney World for Halloween, and I won't tell the costume, but we did a group costume, and John was a part of that. So
it worked well.
Yeah. It did. Yeah. No, it was a last minute. You threw a last minute costume.
What was the
together.
Theme?
So we did. It was a Beauty and the Beast theme, and so three friends of ours did the three the three silly girls that are in love with Gaston.
Absolutely.
And I was LeFou. And then John at the last minute, wanted to join us. So he dressed up as Maurice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
stupid old Maurice. Crazy old Maurice.
Crazy old Maurice. He's always good for a laugh.
Crazy old Maurice. Crazy old Maurice.
And that's so, awesome. Yeah. So yeah. So
but it was cool because we found a couple of bells there and.
Yeah. And then we had the Gaston we ran into, like the character, the face character Gaston was.
Where was Beast? Or was Beast provided by Disney World?
He was in his cat. We never found a Beast.
Oh, the poor Beast.
Well, yeah. Did you sing the song before you went to find him?
We didn't. See, that was
the problem.
That was the problem. That's how we couldn't find the Beast because we did not sing the mob song. So, all right, that sounds like fun. I mean, I admittedly don't go to San Diego Comic Con anymore because it's a giant pain in the rump because it's just too much. But I do like going to those smaller Comic Cons.
I will experience what is San Diego for the first time this year. I do not have a pass for San Diego Comic Con. I'm just experiencing the outside world. And
so you're going to be loitering is what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's a word for that. All right. So your significant other is that person going to Comic Con?
They are, but they're volunteering.
Oh, okay.
So
very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. The most convention thing I've done in the last few years is we go to the D23 convention and we dress up. Every 2 years for that. That's always a lot of fun.
Went to NAMM last year. That's like the biggest convention I've been to.
NAMM was awesome. Well, wait, last year meaning 2017 or?
Yes. No, okay. Was it 2016, Brian?
I think it was 2016.
Yeah.
I was like, cause it was just a couple months ago. It was like two or three.
It was over a year ago. I went with Caitlin.
NAMM is the last.
I heard about it all my life, about how awesome it was. And I gotta say, I wasn't, like, it didn't live up to the hype. Like, I was imagining, like, you know, freaking Robert Plant, you know, not Jimi Hendrix, but like there'd be all these like rock stars there, like you could just like shake hands with and stuff. And I didn't really experience that.
I have to say, I went 2017 and, for the first time, you know, I've heard about it forever. I've got friends who work in the industry. So they go every year, but it very much seemed to me like if you aren't connected to the industry,
so yeah,
that.
Well, it's hard to get in the door if you're not connected to the industry.
Well, yeah, you have to get a pass from someone in the industry, but if you're not with them and you're not a buyer.
Yeah.
Well, that'll do it for convention talk. Tune in next week when we discuss the name change to Stan Lee's Kamikaze. All right. And Brandis, you had an exciting weekend. You went to Universal Studios.
Yes. Got to see a lot of the stuff we've been talking about on the show.
Yeah. So I just want to mention that, so thank you, to everybody who is back this week. We didn't have a show last week. Things got a little crazy in life. And so we, decided to put it off for this week because it's also been a very slow news period. There is nothing. I struggled to find three stories to do this week, but I think we're going to have a good show. So, I want to also welcome our new listeners. We've had quite a few new likes on Facebook in the last couple of weeks. So if you are a new listener and you're just joining us for the first time, or if you've been making your way through our, sort of stable of shows that we've done, we hope you are enjoying the show and we'll give you a way to connect with us later at the end of the show. So Brandis, let's talk about John's favorite trip of yours to Universal Studios. You went and visited all the Harry Potter world.
Yes. So I started off in my robes and my wand, but then nobody else brought even their wands. So I ended up taking it off.
And why would they? Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, you know, the listeners can't see the look I'm giving you.
That came out way ruder than I meant it to. Sorry. Your robes are awesome.
Anyway. But yeah, it's still magical. Got some great pictures, the same kind of great pictures we get every year of the castle and through the castle. Oh, one of our friends that went with us though this year has had a lot of surgery, so he was able to get us front of the line passes. So we got more up close when we went on Harry Potter's Great Journey. We got to get more up close for the pictures of like Dumbledore's office and stuff.
Oh, that's very cool.
Separate line.
Do they do the thing that they do? Because in Florida, I know that you can just take what they call the castle tour if you don't want to ride the ride or you can't ride the ride. And so they just take you through essentially what's the express line or the, you know, not fast pass, they don't like fast pass, but it's their version of it. And they take you through that part of the queue and you can take pictures and
I will have to find out.
I don't I've never seen a group doing it, so yeah. I don't think they do, but.
Yeah. So I know they,
guys, that's a, yeah, that's a great thing.
I know they do it. I know they do it in, I know they do it in Orlando at the Universal. So if you go and ask, you just say, can we do the castle tour? If they've got a team member that's available, they'll take you through essentially the fast pass queue and you don't get to ride, but you can take pictures. You can, you know, still experience the inside of Hogsmeade.
So, I'll have to ask just because that would be amazing because we do have several people in our group every year who get nauseous and that ride will make you nauseous.
Yeah. Well, at least they got rid of the, they got rid of the 3D, didn't they?
Yeah.
I thought they did.
I don't know.
They did. When it very, very first opened, it was 3D.
Oh.
And they, I think it was, a matter Maybe of a couple of months where they
too many glasses.
No, it was that riders were coming out too nauseous because of just how it yeah. interacted. Because if you're off by a millisecond on it, it throws you.
I mean, it does make you pretty nauseous. I do have to say my biggest complaint about the ride is when the Dementors come, Harry scares them off using parcel tongue.
Huh.
And that makes absolutely no sense. And he's saying, leave them alone in parcel tongue. And that's not how you take care of a Dementor at all. So huge mistake. And it bothers me that nobody else is catching that.
John, do you have any feelings about that?
I didn't even know that. So
then that bothers me.
So would you go as far as to say it's ridiculous or ridiculous?
There you go. See, you know what you're supposed to say. Yeah.
How do I know that? God.
But it just bothers me that there's no snakes in that whole ride.
What about on the plane?
He only... No. No, so he's only... Harry only speaks parcel mouth or parcel tongue when there's snakes. He has to see the snakes to be able to speak it. So why is he using that with the Dementors?
It makes it sound like he controls them. I didn't think he does he?
No, and also ridiculous is Bogart's, not Dementors.
Yeah, I don't care.
You're looking for Expecto Patronum.
I was just trying to find a funny way to say ridiculous. Sorry, Harry Potter fans.
And it was too late to put it in this show, but I just wanted to mention it. Did you stay late because they apparently were doing like the lights, the nighttime lights at Hogwarts Castle?
I am so sad to say no because we're old.
Isn't Universal? Yeah, but Universal closes at like 7.
We close at 7. No, I believe the light show's at 9, and we left around 8.
Okay. So just for everybody, so this was the last weekend, of the nighttime lights at Hogwarts Castle. We're going to be making a sort of special appearance for, I guess, the spring break period. It's a state of the art. The lights and display, it's got the score to John Williams and they do different, it's projection mapping. It's something that they do on the castle. They were running it select weekends and then all like this week, it was like every day. So you guys didn't stay for that.
No, I mean, we had a lot of alcohol,
A
lot of time in the Hogshead. So
I love the Hogshead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was never a huge Harry Potter fan until I went to, I've said this before. I was never a huge Harry Potter fan until we went to the one in Universal Studios in Orlando. And that just, the world that they created there made me want to go and see the movies. But you got to experience something else, and it's something else that we talked about. You got to go experience it's the Hello Kitty, experience that
yes.
evicted I Love Lucy.
You know, I don't know if they're planning on expanding it, but it was pretty weak. So there is Hello Kitty dressed up in a beret and a striped shirt. So I guess looking stereotypical French. And like, there is a long line to meet her.
Oh, so was it like a character you could like?
Yes.
Okay.
And then inside, it's a very small store of Hello Kitty products, but they're not that great. A lot of t-shirts with movie themes with Hello Kitty, like Hello Kitty swimming with Jaws coming up underneath, things like that. Not much choice. Then there is like Hello Kitty pillows, Hello Kitty cups, the Build-A-Bow. Very hidden.
We did talk about the Build-A-Bow.
Yes. It is very hidden in a corner. It's $15 for a headband, and then I forget how much per thing, but yeah, you pick your bow and snap it in, and you pick the middle of the bow, which is like a circle or a heart in different colors. So it's pretty much like, it's pretty lame.
Wow.
And it's not easy to find. It's all hidden in the corner. And well,
they made a pretty big deal about it in their press release, which we sort of translated to
our uses for the show. I mean, there was a lot in there about, you know, the Build-A-Bow and the, you know, it's going to be this whole experience. And
yeah, maybe they're going to add more because that was pretty weak. And the whole, the Hello Kitty treats also, it's just this very small counter in that store and it's pretty much just pieces of fudge with a tiny little candy bow in the corner or a cupcake with a bow on top.
Did you happen to glance at any of the prices or anything like that?
Yeah, about $5 for fudge.
Okay. About average. So, all right. You had, sounds like you guys had fun.
We had a lot of fun.
Yeah. I was looking at your Facebook pictures coming in and I laughed because I know exactly what trip you were referring to and I could see your husband's eyes rolling as I watch the pictures come through. All right.
I had to like everything just because I'm married to her.
And you want to stay married to her.
Yeah, I'm saying it. Yeah.
So. All right.
No, they had a lot of fun. You could see it's really cool. Her friend, it's a group of them that go every year and they very generously pay for everybody and all the food and stuff. And it's just super cool because you know, you don't see something like that quite often. And obviously it's really fun. So Ken and Layla, if you're listening.
Oh yes, thank you, Ken and Layla, for Layla's birthday every year. Oh, I do want to add one thing is this year drinks were not as, I don't want to say generous because they're very generous people, but they couldn't buy all the drinks like they usually do every year.
Oh, really?
So I discovered how to sneak in alcohol. Universal Studios.
I will put that on our After Dark section. How to get booze into Universal Studios. All right. John, I know you have a Universal Pass. Have you had any what experience? Have you seen the nighttime lights?
The nighttime lights. Well, I should say when the nighttime lights first came out, we happened to be in Universal and we saw they do kind of like a 1 minute kind of preview show to, I guess, draw people's attention to it. We saw the crowds for it, saw the crowds for the beginning show, and we're like, yeah, we aren't going to stick around for this. Then started to walk away and realized that there's kind of a place by the backside of the castle you could just hang and see most of it. So we saw them pretty much start the show, and I was completely underwhelmed.
Oh, wow.
I think particularly because, you know, we come from the Disney background,
mm-hmm.
and seeing the castle and fireworks and lasers and everything else, it's kind of like, oh, all they're doing is mapping projections onto the castle. Seen that, done that, and it seemed like a very short show. It wasn't extremely long, and it's like the way they're building it up, I was expecting
extravaganza.
And I know that they're restricted. They can't do fireworks.
Right, because if you don't know, Universal Studios Hollywood is located in a neighborhood. Like it's a neighborhood of
by fire hazards.
Yeah,
and surrounded by fire hazards.
Yeah,
I was heard they were, and I could be wrong, but I've heard that they were actually lucky to be able to get the lighting show even done. Like that was kind of a
I know that they, yeah, and that's probably that's the reason why they typically close so early too. It's because it's of the noise ordinance and trying to be mindful of the neighbors. But I feel like if you buy $1.5 million house behind Universal Studios, you kind of know what you're getting into.
I just have to mention that on the studio tour, the one section where it's the War of the Worlds like wreckage.
Yeah.
Okay, there are $1 million homes overlooking that. Like you get up in the morning with your morning coffee, you go out on your balcony, and there is this plane wreckage and burning houses. And I think that is just so neat. I would buy one of those homes if I lived in the area and had the money because it would be such a great talking point at a cocktail party.
I'm sure, yeah. That I'm sure it would get old after a while.
Just look at this beautiful view.
Did you guys? Let me ask you a question. Did you guys go on the universe on this backlot tour?
Oh, always, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Every time we go,
you have to go because sometimes you see things. We saw.
Did you happen to see Steve Harvey when you went?
We did not see Steve Harvey, but we saw the families in the tent waiting their turns.
Okay.
They were
so you missed between tapings of the show.
Yes.
He will.
Well, that's what we saw last year. We saw Tyra Banks.
Oh, cool.
So we have seen people.
My friend does sound for Family Feud.
Okay.
And so he quite often will be, because Steve will take breaks by the truck, and the truck is what is viewable, the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Is viewable from the tour, and so they'll, like, between tapings, kind of just hang there and wave to the tram as it goes by.
I think it was Tyra Banks says America's Got Talent.
Yep.
So yeah, last year they were filming America's Got Talent. So first they stopped to show us all the people outside the studio practicing, which was pretty funny to see these people in costume dancing with no music or singing. And then two SUVs all tinted up come up and they're like, oh, who's this? We don't know who this is. It's somebody famous. So they stopped and waited for like 10 minutes for her to get out. And instantly surrounded by her entourage. So it's like, got my camera up high trying to get a picture, but didn't get a picture, but it was her.
So I've
got to
say, you guys had a way better experience. And last time I was at Universal Studios was about 2 years ago, and you guys had a way better experience on the tram tour than I did. It was just the reason I asked was that I was going to ask what, you know, how did you guys feel about the tram tour? Because in my opinion, I was so disappointed with the tram tour the last time that I went. It was, you know, it was all of the show stuff. So like the King Kong stuff, like you hardly got to see any movie sets. And you got to, I mean, maybe they were working on them. Maybe they were doing things, but it's such a different tram tour than I remember growing up with. It's all about like the silly things that they do, you know, the special effects stuff to make it more interesting for them.
I'm going to say it still is in terms of the stops, you know, the Fast and the Furious and those, yeah. those various things. But, when we went, you go by some of the sets you see, you do go through the, what's the Good Place?
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
That whole area.
Yeah.
I like so that show.
You do see that.
And actually, and last year we covered part of Love from Netflix, which I had just finished watching. So, okay.
And it's the rest of it's kind of hit and miss in terms of like the last time I went, they were filming that weekend one of the, not You've Got Talent, but it was a new dance show.
Okay.
And you could see like the groups coming and going as they were getting in between.
It's like a lot of action.
Yeah. I will say, not as good as the Warner Brothers studio tour.
Right.
Because that one has much more of the actual sets and being able to get and walk around the backlot streets. And
how do you get on that tour?
Warner Brothers.
Yeah,
Warner Brothers, just go to their website. They offer it, I want to say, pretty much year round.
Yeah, we have a friend that does that, the tour guide on there. You go to Warner Brothers and I think either you can prepay or you can go to.
They generally recommend prepay because it will, especially during, if they're not doing any events, it can kind of fill up that weekend. But they'll take you through a couple of sound stages. They take you through all of the outside set stuff.
But it's a really small. It's like it's almost like a golf cart that they take you. So it's like the VIP.
Oh, it is. You're in a VIP golf cart essentially.
Date night, John.
Yeah, it's actually really fun because you get really like up close to where the sets are, and so like they take you through where they filmed that the Grease Live thing is also the set within the outdoor set where they did the Music Man, but you get really close to all of the things, and I think they even let you like get out and walk around a little bit.
And here is why Vacation Land podcast is important, whether you live in Orange County or I'm sorry, in Southern California or not. Because here I am living here all my life just learning about this tour I now want to do.
Oh, yeah. It is
awesome.
And
I think I'll absolutely keep my eye out and post any, because sometimes they run like some really good specials on it. And sometimes there's some other events which include the studio tour. That's actually how I got on it. It was a AT&T Shape event, which is free to the public and included the tour for free. So it's like, okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And if you book the tour, you got to ask for our friend Jonathan. He runs into Ellen all the time.
Oh, Ellen.
Yeah.
Oh,
man. So, all right.
She's my girl crush.
I love it. You know, she's bidding on her animatronic. She's actually going to get to like a chance because they're selling it at the Van Eaton Galleries. They actually found her animatronic from the attraction that she was in at Disney World.
Oh, I saw something about that.
They didn't just offer it to her.
Because it's being sold through the Van Eaton Galleries auction. So,
well, is it like at least going to charity?
No, it's just going to like private collectors. All right, guys. Well, we got to move on. So we're going to move on right now. We got some news stories, and let's go park hopping.
To those of you who have just joined us, welcome aboard the Disneyland monorail.
Remain seated, please. Permanecer sentados, por favor.
Welcome to Knott's Berry Tales. You are approaching a moving ramp. When the ride operator asks you to board your car, please look down and step carefully onto the ramp. Thank you, and enjoy your ride through Knott's Berry Tales.
All right, park hopping is our news segment, and we're going to kick it off to Brandis.
Okay. Universal Studios Hollywood announces its all-new DreamWorks Theater featuring Kung Fu Panda: The Emperor's Quest, which will officially open on June 15th. Inspired by the global blockbuster franchise, the attraction will take guests on a thrilling journey that fuses captivating storytelling with state-of-the-art visual effects for a highly engaging experience. Created and produced by DreamWorks Animation and Universal Creative, Kung Fu Panda: The Emperor's Quest recounts a plot-filled story whereby on the morning of the Emperor's Great Feast of Heroes, Dragon Warrior Po, is that Po or Poo?
It's Po.
Po.
You ever seen Kung Fu Panda? The movie. Go. It's a good movie.
Okay, is it on Netflix?
Yeah. Actually, it is.
Oh, okay.
Huh. Jack Black, man.
Yeah, I'm just, so anyway. So, Poe embarks on a wild and perilous mission to deliver the rare, precious liquid of limitless power to the palace, while enlisting guests to join him on the exciting adventure filled with raging rapids, river pirates, awesome magic, and kung fu. Coupled with 7 Christie 4K Boxer cinema projectors and 360-degree surround sound audio, sweeping physical effects from water to wind will empower guests to feel more like participants than spectators in the adrenaline-spiked adventure. Featuring an original score by composer Jermaine Franco, the storyline begins as guests enter the pre-show area of the theater, where they meet an array of DreamWorks characters who kick off the attraction's narrative. From there, guests will enter the main theater, complete with new ultra-plush, fully articulated seats that pivot and swivel in tandem with the 180-degree action. So it sounds nauseating already.
Yeah. And we'll talk about this versus Shrek 40.
The newly constructed building that houses the DreamWorks Theater is inspired by Mission Revival architecture and harkens back to the golden age of Hollywood's Art Deco period of the 1920s. Including a box office ticket seller booth reminiscent of the time period and staffed by a three-dimensional usher asleep on the job. As guests navigate past the ticket booth through the flourishing outdoor garden and into the theater queue, they will encounter a series of 36 movie posters that pay homage to DreamWorks animation films. Within the lobby, a selection of over 20 award statuettes will be on display, representing a sampling of the Golden Globe, Emmy and Annie Awards, DreamWorks Animation. Sorry. There should have been a comma there. Emmy and Annie Awards, DreamWorks Animation has amassed from 2018 to 2015. A collection of original sculpted figures of the Kung Fu Panda: The Emperor's Quest characters will also be on display, along with the artifacts representing magical powers that Po brought back from the spirit realm.
Okay, so it sounds like they're like, so did you ever go on Shrek? And John, I know you've gone to Universal. Shrek 40, yay, yes, no.
You know, I honestly don't remember Shrek 40.
Yeah.
I think...
The pre-show was...
I think I always skipped it.
Yeah, the pre-show was really fun because it had like Pinocchio in the box and it had like the three pigs and...
Smart crowd.
Yeah, really smart.
If they're that smart, what are they doing here?
What are we still doing in here?
Yeah!
Help! Help!
Hurry, help, us. Us.
Yeah.
Help us!
Help
us!
Help us! Yeah. Get me out of here! Not much help, are they?
Yeah!
Yeah!
Hey, what are you people doing here? Get out before it's too late!
They're not a very animated bunch, Gingy.
Look at them.
What are they waiting for?
This is torture.
The show itself was just, I mean, it was just, you know, they squirt water at you and they, you know, the fans blow, you know, wind.
It's like every other ride there except for like...
Yeah. We used to have a fire, water, and drops. That's what you get at Universal Studios. Fire.
But yeah, it's pretty much almost all Universal Studios rides are you sit in a car or a theater chair or yeah. something. It's kind of like everything is Star Tours, but more nauseating.
Yeah. So Shrek 4D, like you would like the seats would like bounce around and like shake you around when, you know, you were in the carriage and, you know, it would squirt water at you. So this sounds like, I mean, now except it sounds like the seats pivot and twirl. So I don't know. Anybody excited about this? Anybody?
No.
Does anybody like, I gotta go and check this out. We'll go. I mean, we'll go and check this out, obviously. But
yeah. I mean, if I'm already at Universal, yes, I will probably go on it because it's new, but I'm not going to Universal specifically because
of
it.
Is Kung Fu Panda bigger than Shrek?
Like in terms of like taller or like in terms of like, like no, they're probably about the same size.
No, but I mean like, okay, my kids and myself, I love Shrek and my kids love Shrek. My daughter's 20 and still loves Shrek.
Kung Fu Panda. It's a pretty big movie franchise.
It's a big movie franchise. I think it may actually be bigger overseas. So it's a bigger overseas draw.
Okay, so it's a tourism thing now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, Shrek 4D has been there for like 10 years. I don't know how long it's been there. It's like 10 years. And so it was time to make something different there. And so if you ever went to old school Universal Studios, this is on the upper lot. Right before you get to where you board the trams, it's right before the water play area. And this actually used to be where they had the Star Trek experience many, many years ago, in the old days of Universal Studios. But, yeah, so they're going to retheme the building and they're going to put a new show in. So yeah, we'll go check it out.
I mean, will they still keep Donkey there? Because that is so much fun. Interacting with Donkey is fun.
Okay, so I was really disappointed that it was not an actual waffle cart when I first saw that.
Oh, yes. Actually, that's how we discovered Donkey.
Yeah. All right. John, what's going on at the Starcade?
Well, Disneyland files a permit to renovate the upper levels of the Starcade. Disneyland filed the permit application with the city of Anaheim to, quote, renovate 5,000 square feet. This 5,000 square foot area will become an indoor air conditioned queue space for Space Mountain. The existing roof deck queue will be modified to feed into the new indoor area. And since the 90s, the second level has been vacant and mostly off limit to guests. There's a set of speed ramps from the first level. They've been blocked off at various times, usually by arcade games, sometimes press penny machines, sometimes just good old plain black curtains. Eventually, the ramps were removed altogether, so the only way to get up to the second floor is either backstage or coming through the front queue. So, as we all know, the Starcade was a two-story video arcade located between the Star Trader and the end of Space Mountain in Tomorrowland at Disneyland. It opened on May 27th, 1977, along with Space Mountain. In recent years, the lower level has just been used as character meet-and-greet locations, promoting Wreck-It Ralph, and in 2012, Wreck-It Ralph in 2012 and Big Hero 6 in 2014. It's also become overflow retail space from the Star Trader, and that's taken over most of the lower level, with less and less arcade games being offered than previous years. Until the release of Wreck-It Ralph, the Starcade hosted mostly contemporary and modern arcade games. Since Wreck-It Ralph was released, it's kind of shifted back to retro arcade games from the 70s and 80s. But by 2015, the Starcade ceased to function as a video arcade. In 2017, it was used as a welcome center for annual pass holders on annual pass holder days, featuring button distribution and meet and greets with retired characters.
So I really miss the Starcade. I miss the Starcade in its original form.
Is that the one that had like the picture of Mickey like in a spacesuit?
So that's still there. That is the Star Trader, which is the shop.
Yeah, the neon outside of it.
Yeah.
Just below us is the Star Trader, where you'll find the largest selection of Disney signature clothing, toys, and gift items here at the Magic Kingdom.
The Starcade is the one that was around the corner.
Oh, I can picture it in my mind now. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's around the corner, and then you used to go upstairs, and it used to have speed ramps, and there used to be a full-sized X-Wing fighter up there, which they've...
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
They've relocated now to the shop that they've taken. So it used to be, like, hanging up there, and so the bottom level was this, like, gloriously like 1970s arcade in orange tile, like orange and yellow tile, and it had, you know, just your typical video games. When I used to work Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, I used to work the exit position where we collected all the glasses, and they had this god awful like fester, like the electrical like test, you know.
Oh,
you know,
I like those.
Okay, cool. Those are fine, but not when you have to hear it go off every 3 minutes.
Ooh, right.
When you're sitting there in a 20-minute rotation, and it was the loudest, and they finally took it out even before I left the park. But so then you used to go upstairs, and they used to have like big like motion simulators, and they had the thing that would spin you around, you know, the gyrosphere thing that you would sit in.
Yeah, any of the more modern games which would come out at that time, maybe, yeah, which is a little more cutting edge, they'd have on the upper level.
On the upstairs level, yeah.
I have a question, and this is, goes for all parks. It's like, I always didn't, why did they put, like, why do you go to the arcade when you're at Disneyland?
Well, and honestly, that was a big, thing whenever, as a kid, like, oh, I want to go to the arcade, and parents would be like, we paid money to come into Disneyland. I'm not giving you money to go to the arcade. I think part of it was a wonderfully air-conditioned place, so it was a great place to take a quick break.
Okay.
It was a good place, you know, for a quick 15, 20-minute, you know, distraction from all of the lines. And for parents, it was like, go do something, get away from me for a few minutes.
also, don't forget, like, these were all built in an era where, like, video games were, like, the latest thing. They were, like, in the 70s, like, video games are huge. And also, you had to pay for each individual ride that you did. So you bought by ticket books, or like at Knott's Berry Farm, they had the, you know, ticket booths where you had to buy individual tickets.
Oh, they still did that in the 70s?
They did that all the way up until the early 80s.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think it was like, I think when 84 or 83, when they finally.
Once people perfected how to make the fake tickets is when they stopped it.
Right. Yeah. This printing technology improved. But so, yeah. So it was all about having like the latest, you know, crazy.
Okay. That makes sense.
So, yeah.
Now I understand. But,
I mean, same reason why, you know, Videopolis.
Yeah, Videopolis.
Or Videopolis was huge. And, you know, the nighttime, well, why am I taking my kids to Disneyland when they're just going to go hang out at a club or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah.
Was that the one where people would dance?
Yeah.
I remember that now.
But, and then for many years, they would help the cast member. At Christmas time, they used to have like a big 50% off sale for Disney cast members. So you would go upstairs to this top of the Starcade, and they would have all this merchandise that you could get for like New Year Christmas shopping at Disneyland if you were a cast member, and you could get like 50% off all the merchandise, and they would just have just this huge room full of stuff that on table, you know, big plastic tables that you could just, you know, do all your Christmas shopping, and everybody got something Disney. They don't do that anymore. They stopped doing that, I think, the second year that I worked there, and I started there in 1999. So, you know, they used to have, you know, the cast blast parties, which for cast members, they used to have little things up there. And then they turned it into a corporate event space. I will say that I'm glad they're going to now be funneling the Space Mountain queue in there, because Space Mountain queue, you know, you used to go up, you used to have the queue outside, then you would go up the escalators, and then you would just kind of go in from there. And there was a tables for eating and things like that upstairs. But, right now you're kind of left up there to bake in the sun. So I'm glad that they're going to be moving this, inside into the air conditioning. That'll be fun. I hope they keep that 70s tile though. All right. So finally, our last news story, we're going to, give it to our other John. And, Pixar Fest kicked off this week at the Disneyland Resort. John.
Did indeed, Chris. Pixar Fest, the biggest Pixar celebration ever to come to Disney parks, brings guests together to celebrate friendship and beyond for a limited time, now through September 3rd, 2018. The first ever Pixar Fest presents some of the beloved characters and stories from Pixar Animation Studios in new and exciting ways at Disneyland Park, Disneyland California Adventure Park, and throughout the resort. Films such as Pixar's Toy Story, Coco, Monsters Incorporated, and Up come to life for guests in a new nighttime spectacular. The return of two favorite parades with fresh Pixar surprises, new decor, musical entertainment, creatively themed food and beverages, and even merchandise. The new multimedia fireworks show, Together Forever, a Pixar nighttime spectacular, celebrates the heart of Pixar as it lights up the sky over Disneyland Park. For the first time, Pixar Play Parade makes its way through Disneyland Park. The parade begins with an appearance by the iconic Pixar lamp. Oh, that's awesome. I've never seen him in person. And Yellow Ball from the original Pixar short.
It was really tiny, so I don't know how they're going to translate.
Yeah. Also new to the parade are characters from the film Up. Wilderness explorer Russell appears astride the colorful flightless bird. Kevin as Carl and Doug follow behind with Carl's tethered house floating above. That was a tough one to read there. Inside Out also joins Pixar's Play Parade, with joy and sadness perched atop colorful memory orbs. Paint the Night Parade also returns, and this time guests enjoy the parade's more than 1 million brilliant LED at Disneyland California. Paint the Night features characters from Toy Story, Monsters, Inc., and Cars. Another Pixar story joins Paint the Night in June with a new high-energy float inspired by The Incredibles and Incredibles 2. Beginning June 8, the Pixar Pals Dance Party at the Tomorrowland Terrace in Disneyland will get guests of all ages dancing with some of their favorite Pixar characters. The dance party will feature a chance to get up close with Pixar characters such as Russell, Doug, Woody, Jesse, the Green Army Men, and more. Who would you dance with?
The Green Army Men.
Yeah, I want to see how they dance.
Yeah. They just
like shuffle.
Yeah, they just changed their costume too. Well, so they used to wear these like creepy like face covering.
Oh yeah.
You know, like almost like those
like
weird
Green Man.
Yeah, Green Man. So but now they've just changed their costume out at Walt Disney World to like now they're more of a face character with like, and they look more like Army Men. They're just not this like faceless shapy thing.
But do they still have the
they still have the little
base so that they're okay?
Yeah, so
yes, I want to see them dance.
So
it was fun seeing them back in the day when they did the parade at Disneyland.
Yeah,
where they marched the parade in that
like shuffle
little
type
base shuffle.
I bet they had amazing thighs.
So, this is a thing that they're doing this summer. I think we're going to, Brandis and alternate John and I are going to go to Disneyland, sometime in the month of May. And so we're going to go check this out and take a lot of pictures. And, this is a thing that they're doing and they're promoting the heck out of it. And,
everything they do, it's stellar. So
yeah.
I can't imagine.
I haven't heard a whole lot of reaction about this. I think the announcement when they made the announcement of this at D23 last year, it kind of landed with a thud. You know, nobody was particularly excited about this. They're just going to throw up a bunch. And they're opening up their, Pixar Pier is coming in next year. And so, it's just a new version of the Pixar Play Parade that was over at DCA. They're adding a couple of floats. They've moved. The Paint the Night Parade is now over at California Adventure, so they've kind of swapped parades. They're adding a new float to the Paint the Night Parade. They were doing these really cool buckets for annual pass holders. So they were doing one of the ones that I wanted to get, and I just read this morning that they're sold out, was the little green aliens from Toy Story.
Oh, yeah. the popcorn buttons,
but with the free refill.
Free
refills. Yeah.
They're
it was
huge,
a popcorn bucket. Yeah.
I was wondering what the heck you were talking about buckets, and I'm like, why do pass holders need a bucket?
Yeah, popcorn buckets. Yeah,
you can buy a popcorn bucket. That makes sense.
I watched a video by this guy named Justin Scard, and he bought
not free, like $1 refills, but anyways, yeah.
Well, still $1 is not bad.
I mean, at Disneyland, that's free.
Yeah.
You know, right?
Yeah.
But there's like, you buy separate ones and then they attach to each other.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But the
lines.
Then
you gotta walk around with this, huge.
Well, not only that, but the lines for these things are insane. Like, I'm a Disneyland annual pass holder and I don't have that much time. I think a lot of people go and like sell them on, they go buy them and sell them on eBay, but you're waiting 2 hours in line for this, popcorn bucket and I don't know. I can't do that. I can't justify my time doing that. But,
well, good thing because they're sold out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, now I don't have to worry about it.
It's gone, Chris. It's over.
Is anybody else, have any thoughts about Pixar Fest? It's like, is this something like if you were just coming out from, one of the random, one of the surrounding states,
So people coming to vacation at Disneyland don't care about things like that.
Yeah.
They care about all the rides they've heard about, Splash Mountain, the Dumbo ride, all the things they saw in the Full House episode where they go to Disney World.
Every ABC episode ever.
So it's like they do things like this. It's for the repeat customers. But then at the same time, they're making their pass changes and stuff that aren't nice to the repeat customers. It's like they're against their pass holders, but also trying to keep them entertained.
Right.
I respectfully disagree because of what John said. It's a good time for parents to be like, okay, just sit down and watch this while I rest my legs and eat some popcorn.
I think the Pixar choices was an odd one. I think,
I think it's, we know the reason they're doing it is pre-pushing the whole switch over to Pixar Pier.
Yeah.
But I kind of think you're right in that it's I don't want to say Pixar's irrelevant nowadays, because obviously it's not. We love the movies, but.
Right. But their biggest hits in the last couple of years have not been Pixar. I mean, Coco, Frozen.
Right.
You know, like Disney Animation is actually competing and have not overtaking like the quality.
Well, it's kind of combined now into the same group, but.
Right.
But you know, with Incredibles 2 coming out, there's going to be the push from that, but.
Sort of your answer right there.
But again, it's like, for me personally, I kind of hate when, oh, let's throw Incredibles 2 into the parade before the movie's even premiere.
Right. You have no idea what they're talking about.
Either, exactly.
You know, I don't know.
I mean, at least for Incredibles 2, the characters are mostly the same. So it's.
Yeah. Like I said, there wasn't a whole lot of like super positive reaction. Who knows? I mean, this could be great. They've had a lot of success with some of the food. I've seen the pictures of some of the food that they've done.
The food has kind of looked incredible. I don't think it's a huge, I don't think it's going to be a huge draw. I don't think it's going to be a huge miss. I think it's just one of those where it's going to be good, because Disney usually does decent parades. We won't talk about Light Tragic. But it is what it is. I think
I got to go get me one of those pineapple Dole Whip donuts. That's what I got to.
I've heard they're just an immense sugar overload.
Yeah, I bet they are. I can't eat much sugar these days, but that's a thing that I'm gonna take my risk.
I know the Dole Whip things, but what's this one?
It's supposed to be a donut that is flavored. It's supposed to taste like the pineapple Dole Whip.
Oh, it's a donut with
pineapple frosting.
It's like glazed donut with
it's a pineapple glazed sugar donut with.
But it looks like the glazed frosting. Like, I don't want to say. Think of what a buttercream would look like. I'm sure that's not what it is, but just piled on top of it in kind of that. Dole Whip look.
Oh.
So it looks like, you know, frozen Dole Whip on top of this glazed donut.
All right, guys.
So really, it's not meant to be eaten.
All of this food that they come up with is like, it's mostly just for Instagram. It's like the Starbucks drinks thing. You know, it's so that you can put it on Instagram and it looks great. And it's a blue wall and the purple wall and whatever other color wall they have you taking your picture from Instagram. Okay. So we have a little bit of time left. And so I just wanted to, speaking of all the things Pixar and these things that are coming in with the parks and some of the changes that are coming, especially to California Adventure, I'm going to do a series of these. And so we're just going to go a little bit in depth to some of the areas. I want to do the Knott's Berry Farm. I know some of the things that are there, some of the history of things and things there. Universal Studios, especially with the tram tour, I want to go into, some of the changes that have come to the tram tour over the last couple of years. But this one is especially relevant. A couple of weeks ago, Disney made the announcement that they were going to be bringing in the Marvel characters and that Bugs Land would be going away. But if you weren't there when the park first opened, you may not know that there's actually a whole section of, that was a whole section of the park that was never even Bugs Land. So there was something there. So we're going to go into a little bit of history of that. We're going to talk about the Marvel announcement. And so feel free to you guys to chime in a little bit, because it's a lot of stuff to cover in the next few minutes. So the parks in Anaheim are going to add the experiences featuring the likes of the Avengers, Spider-Man, Ant-Man, and the other Marvel characters. Disneyland Resort in California will start in 2020 with Spider-Man and the Avengers joining the existing Guardians of the Galaxy attraction to become what the park describes as a completely immersive superhero universe. At Disneyland Resort, the new themed land will be anchored by the popular Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout at Disney California Adventure Park. John, have you gotten a chance to write that?
I have not.
Okay. I wrote it once. I was chaperoning for a group trip, and it's pretty fun. I miss Tower of Terror, but it's still pretty fun. The expanded presence will begin recruiting guests in 2020, furthering the evolution of Disney California Adventure Park, making it now nothing to do with California. The Guardians of the Galaxy will be joined by Spider-Man and It's Tough to Be a Bug, closed on March 19th to make way for the new heroic experience and the rest of the land, where it's going to close this summer. But let's take a closer look at the area even before A Bug's Land moved in. Bountiful Valley Farms opened with California Adventure 1.0 on February 8th, 2001, and was one of 9 attractions in the park's Golden State District, along with Condor Flats, home of Soarin' Over California, Grizzly Peak, home of Grizzly River Run, and the Bay Area, home of empty buildings designed to look like the set of Full House and a Whoopi Goldberg-hosted movie, Golden Dream. Did you guys ever see any of that? Golden Dream?
No.
Yeah.
Can I make an entrance or can I make an entrance? You don't have a clue who I am, do you? My name's Calafia, as in California. You see, a long, long time ago, this Spanish writer dreamed of a land dripping with gold, with a ruler more beautiful, more exciting, and more fun than all the rest. Surprise! I was talking about myself, honey. I'm Calafia, queen of California.
Yeah, so there was a... So if you go on YouTube, you can find video, old video of Golden Dream hosted by Whoopi Goldberg. And in the film about the, you know, the history of the railroads, there was a scene where they essentially blew up a small child. And then people complained that they took it out. People complained that it was in there. People complained. Yeah, God, it was really dark. Then people complained that they took it out. So all other attractions, other areas include the Golden Vine Winery and Pacific Wharf. They rounded out the offerings in the Golden State District. The original entrance to the farm was a sign highlighting the area's sponsorship by a tractor and heavy equipment manufacturer. It read, "Welcome to Bountiful Valley Farm, presented by Caterpillar, a tribute to the abundance and diversity of agriculture in California." The area featured an exhibit by Caterpillar, and you'll learn about tractor history, and you can admire some exciting tractor Caterpillar equipment of 2001. Caterpillar Incorporated is headquartered in Peoria, Illinois, but the company traces its roots to California. You guys excited about Bountiful Valley Farms yet? This is classic DCA circa 2001. Bountiful Valley Farms not only had lifelike vegetation and farming exhibits, it also had two fake animals, a Hereford steer and a Holstein dairy cow, and the sign explained why the two life-size cows were there. Since the first herd of beef cattle was, and I'm quoting here, moved to California in 1774, production of cattle and calves has become the fourth most valuable farm product in the state. Other offerings in Bountiful Valley Farm included the irrigation station, where you could learn about irrigation and cool off in a water play area modeled after California farm irrigation systems, and the Santa Rosa Seed and Supply, where you could purchase real seeds and start your very own garden. In addition to the agricultural displays, tractors, water play area, and gift shop, the Bountiful Valley Farm section included It's Tough to Be a Bug, which is also included a small entertainment stage and two counter service restaurants, Bountiful Valley Farmers Market, and San Andreas Shakes, which served date shakes, and whose tagline was delicious to a fault. Get it? Caterpillar continued to sponsor Bountiful Valley Farm until late 2006 when Caterpillar left. They took their tractors with them. So, again, classic DCA 2001. Let's see what corporate sponsors we can get in here. And it landed, you know, it went over, let's just say, like a fart in church. And A Bug's Land marked the first major expansion of California Adventure in response to vocal criticism that the park had too few rides for families and smaller children when it opened in 2001. The new land was built and opened in 2002 on the site of the former Bountiful Valley Farm. Bountiful Valley Farm became a part of that district, and bug characters from the 1998 Disney Pixar movie, A Bug's Life, moved into the displays. Santa Rosa Seed and Supply became the PT Flea Market. In late 2001, Disney announced a $1.1 billion redo of California Adventure, and plans showed that the site of Bountiful Valley Farm would become the starting point for the desert road into the Cars Land, and Bountiful Valley Farm closed forever on September 7th, 2010. So, what took over the farm in 2002? Well, in A Bug's Land, you can shrink to the size of the land's inhabitants and you can see things from their point of view. Giant garden hoses spray water, discarded Chinese food boxes become flying vehicles, and an umbrella serves as a circus tent. The exaggerated sizes make the bug's world look even bigger. Some of the detailed insect aspects of A Bug's Land included the fireflies whose bottoms become lamplights, and as well as the towering flowers, and also the best bathroom design ever. My favorite bathroom design at Disney, at the Disneyland Resort. So if you go into A Bug's Land, you go to the restroom across from the puddle area, the restroom entrance is an upside down, like chewed out tissue box.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's really neat.
We should add that to our bathroom
to our bathroom episode.
Moaning Myrtle's bathroom at Universal.
I didn't understand until I saw the movies. So some of the details, all of the attractions are pretty similar. All of the attractions are pretty similar, albeit better themed versions of what you would find in a smaller amusement park and fairs, and were mostly designed with the preschool set in mind. However, one attraction that we're going to get to is being mourned by many, many Disney fans. So a lot of these attractions were designed because people were complaining, there's nothing for my kid to do. There was lots of restaurants, there were lots of places to drink and eat, and there was a roller coaster, and there was Soarin', and there was a Rapids ride, but they really were catering, and I think people miss that point now, almost 20 years after DCA has opened. They were really trying to cater to young, upwardly mobile people with money who wanted to go eat and drink and shop and, you know, didn't necessarily care about Disney rides. And boy, were they wrong. So the attractions that were there when the land first opened were Flick's Flyers. You can hop onto a discarded food carton over in a brief flight in Flick's latest invention. You can fly in a contraption made of stitched leaves and twigs, and when you take a twirl, you can get a great view of Bugs Land. And this is a typical balloon-style attraction. They have a very similar one at Knott's Berry Farm at Camp Snoopy. You can go on Francis's Ladybug Boogie. You can take a spin to famous swing tunes as you ride on the back of Francis the Ladybug. The ladybug runs around each other on a figure eight track similar to Mater's Junkyard Jamboree, which I'm taking you guys on when we go, because that's just a fun ride. Not Francis Ladybug, but the Mater's Junkyard Jamboree. There's Princess Dot's Puddle Play Park, and you can play under spray. And this is actually a really neat themed area too, because it actually looks like sprinklers and hoses, and it's dripping from a faucet. The Tuck and Roll Drive and Buggies. You can drive your buggy at PT Fleece Circus, and there are other types of bumper car attractions. And then finally, everyone's favorite, and the one that's being mourned by everybody, Heimlich's Choo Choo Train. Heimlich the Bavarian Caterpillar welcomes guests joining him on his journey and enthusiastically points out all of his favorite foods as he passes along the way. So you pass by an apple, a watermelon, sprouts, animal crackers, and a cupcake, hard candies, and candy corn. And some of these you can smell along the way. So Heimlich's Choo Choo Train is the only ride in a Bugs Land that holds more than two guests per vehicle. And Pixar animator Joe Rampt, who provided the voice for Heimlich in A Bug's Life before he passed away, also provides the narration for the Choo Choo Train. So in our last couple of minutes, let's talk about, does anybody have any experience with anything here in A Bug's Life or A Bug's Land?
I remember when DCA first opened, and I remember that the farm area.
Yeah.
And just going through it and pretty much going, wow, this is a waste of space. I mean, it talks very little about the history of California and how much agriculture California does do. But
from what I understand, it was one of Michael Eisner's favorite sections of the park. And I'm assuming that it was because it cost them very little money to operate and was pretty much just made them money from the sponsorship and the shops and stores and restaurants and stuff.
Maybe from the restaurants, but it also, I mean, it was a decent size of, you know, when you look at income per square footage.
Yeah.
I don't think it brought in anywhere near as much as anything else would do by putting a ride there or putting something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Bigger. I think it was just more of a, we're trying to push the idea of this is, DCA was supposed to be like the history of California. So, we're putting this in because it fits that area.
Yeah. It was unbelievably boring.
Yeah. It was absolutely and if you went through it once, it was like, okay.
Yeah.
I never need to go back to that area.
You could climb up into a tractor and take a, you know, photo with, you know, yourself in a tractor because it's something you do on vacation, I guess. So,
I mean, maybe if you're from California.
Yeah. So, yeah, yes. You could, but that was the extent of what was there. And so, like I said, classic DCA 2001. And I don't think it goes acknowledged enough how much A Bug's Land was just born out of panic, sheer panic, because California Adventure opened in 2001. The September 11th had a lot to do with it. But also when California Adventure opened, they opened it to no one. There was only a few hundred people that came to the opening ceremony. And so many annual pass holders and guests were just trashing it because there was nothing for families to do. And Disney really blew it on their market research and who wanted to come into this park. And
I mean, did they do any market research?
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure that they were thinking, you know, we're going to play to this new audience, and this is what they want, and they want cheap, and they want, you know, just things to eat and buy. And Yeah, they were just wrong.
Well, and I think it was the twofold of, you know, and actually would be great to podcast to do kind of the history of the building of DCA.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, my understanding too is that it was pretty much built by the corporate accountants, that everything, every line item was being questioned as to why is this costing so much, versus what's this going to bring in? What's this? The standard look and feel of a Disney ride got replaced by corporate money line items. Yeah. And, oh, this is cheaper to do. We're going to go that.
A lot of off the shelf stuff, a lot of, and they were still paying off, you know, Disneyland Paris at this point too. You know, Disneyland Paris opened,
which, yeah,
you know, was a disaster in the '90s. And so, a lot of this was, you know, they were just ordering stuff literally out of a catalog and, you know, the park paid the price and, you know, they had to pay for it $1 billion later. I think somebody said that the actual cost of building DCA in 2001, not the hotel, not Downtown Disney, the actual cost of building the park was something like $650 million.
That's crazy.
And most of that went to restaurants and, you know, shops. Very little of that went to attractions. So, but anyways, that's our little history segment on. So now, you know, next time you go to Bugs Land, you can, you know, get a feel for what used to be there and be thankful that your adventure at California Adventure does not involve you taking a picture in a tractor.
So, Chris,
yes,
you know, to end that, do you think, you know, just roundtable wise, looking in the future with bringing Marvel in and how the changes have happened at California Adventure, do you think there's ever going to come a point where they rebrand that park?
I think they're going to have to. Yeah, because there's very little to do with California now in that park with Pixar Pier. And I think as much as I dislike Paradise Pier, I think it fit the theme. Pixar Pier just doesn't fit. I mean, this doesn't fit the theme. I think they're just going to rebrand it as, you know, Disney's alternate IP park and just, you know, use it to put whatever IPs they can't shoehorn into Disneyland. I think at some point they're going to have to rebrand it, much like they're going to have to rebrand Hollywood Studios out in Orlando.
Yeah.
Because tell me what Marvel or Pixar has to do with California. Unless they just don't care anymore, which is, you know, also probably an option. All right. Well, thank you very much, guys. Thank you. That's going to wrap up our discussion for this show. You can connect with Vacationland online by visiting our Facebook page, facebook.com/vacationlandpodcast, Instagram @VLpodcast, and our Twitter account @vacationlandshow. Make sure to visit our YouTube channel by searching the Vacationland Podcast and see some of the sights from Disney's recent Lunar New Year Festival and our videos of DCA's Food and Wine Festival and our trip to the Knott's Berry Farm Boysenberry Festival. I'd like to thank all of our roundtable for joining us here today. Thank you, John. Thank you, Alternate John. Thank you, Brandis. And we'd like to thank you, our listeners. Thank you very much for joining us. We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your stay in Vacation Land. See you next time.
If you like vegetables,
fresh food and flowers,
give thanks to us buds for our marvelous powers.
If it weren't for the fact that we like the taste, you'd be out there wallowing in shoulder-high waste. Shoulder-high waste.